Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. To find out more, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay only for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one shared plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 131 for January 22nd of 2014. Getting Wired. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. Bob and Gordo are both on the road this week. I believe Bob is at the NAMM show. That's the National Association of Music Merchandisers. And Gordo, I think he's at Quartz Fest. I'm not positive about that, though, but maybe one of our other guests here will know. Let's bring in my buddy down just a little bit south of here, Don Wilbanks. Is it chilly down there tonight, Don?
You know, it's not too bad. It's 39 degrees right now, so it's supposed to be a little bit cooler towards the end of the week. But I think Gordo is at Quartz Fest. I know he was last weekend, and Bob, of course, at the NAMM show. And I'm doing my best to keep the some of the NAMM people employed, particularly Fender. I bought my son a left-handed Stratocaster for his 14th birthday the other day. So anyway, so that's the story here, George.
Well, that's neat, Don. You know, I'm not sure. My son may have been 15 when I bought him his first Stratocaster, but yeah, somewhere right around there. But according to my cousin, it's not a good idea to buy your son a guitar because that's all they'll want to do instead of getting a real job when they grow up. You know, my son's a bass player for a living now. But anyway, let's bring Dale on in here. I know it's a little chillier out there, judging by his outfit. Hi, Dale.
Hey, we're Dale getting Kenobi. Ready for tomorrow morning, but I just looked at the K0HYD weather station here, George. It's 31.6 degrees now. We've got average winds at 19 miles an hour from the northeast and gusts to 24 miles an hour at this time. But tomorrow morning's the news here, weather-wise. It's supposed to be down to 4 degrees, minus 4 degrees, with a wind chill of minus 15 tomorrow morning when we get up around 6 or 8 o'clock. So that's going to be cold. So we've got the hip ham shirt on from Laura out in Oregon, getting ready for that cold tomorrow morning. George, go ahead.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty chilly. I think we've got some cooler weather coming yet, but I bet we got someone else here who can top all of that. Good evening, Cheryl.
Hey, good evening there. How are you tonight, George? How's your weather in your part of the country?
Well, it's chilly. It's about 40 degrees right now. I think maybe tomorrow night it's going to get down to 18. I may have my days mixed up, though, but I know you folks up there in the north are used to all that. So we got any good questions coming up later in the chat room tonight?
Well, I think we already have one so far. It sounds like a nice technical question that I'm going to reserve for you here, George. So, yeah, we're working at it. And everybody, just be aware, we have George and Don and Dale for questions tonight, as Gordo and Bob are someplace else, but they will return, rest assured. So all is good. But, yes, we are trying to get used to this outlandishly cold weather with all the snow, and it just sometimes it's been below zero, and you know, we've had minus three just 2 days ago, and we had a little snow and drifting and lots of ice about a couple days ago on the way to work. It was a little bit scary at times, but we get through it up here, and I hope it's all good on your end, everyone, and you're all safe. So back over to you, George.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. We'll be coming back to you a little later in the show. And get your questions in on the chat room there. We got a little extended session tonight, so we need some good questions in there for Dale and Don and myself, and you might even throw one in there for Cheryl if you want to as well. Well, Don, I know you and I had been talking about visiting a ham fest this weekend, and I just heard you're not going to be making it up here to Jackson to the Capital City Ham Fest. What are you going to be doing?
No, I'm not, and it's upsetting me tremendously because I love that ham fest. It's a it's a nice little 2.5 hour detour up north. I get to see you and Tommy and Jim. You remember your friend Jim, and
yes,
and we get to play around with you guys and everything. And but unfortunately, I'm not going to make it because before the ham fest was scheduled, after the ham fest was scheduled, I found out that the Monster Trucks Monster Jam was coming to the Superdome, and it's this weekend. And it being my son's birthday on Monday, happy birthday, Tyler, 14. And we got tickets to the Monster Jam for him and then got upgraded to suite tickets. And then today I found out that I've got pit passes, and that starts at 2:00 in the afternoon. So no time to drive 3 hours north to Jackson and then an hour back from my house to the Superdome. So we're going to forego the Ham Fest this year, and it upsets me because I love the Jackson Ham Fest. It's also the ARRL Mississippi State Convention. I was looking forward to that and seeing a bunch of people that I usually only get to see when I go up there that way. So we'll have to put that on for next year, I guess. But c'est la vie. We're going to have fun at the Monster Trucks anyway.
Yeah, better bring your earplugs for that. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun, even though you won't be there, Don. Tommy and I are already working on our shopping list. I don't have much on there for this year. I think I need to, I'm going to look for another scope probe. You know, one of mine here is bad. And I think that showed up in an episode here a while back. Uh-huh. And a few little other odds and ends. Nothing in particular. I don't have any major equipment purchases planned this year. But, you know, I like to look at the junk because, you know, there's nothing like good junk. And every ham needs more junk laying around the shack. I mean, that's just sort of a requirement. It should be on the exams there. But Tommy, I know he's got PL-259s on his list. He always does.
But of course. I'm saving my money for Dayton. This is a Dayton year for me, so I'm saving my money for Dayton.
Yeah, and I'm going to be going too. Really looking forward to that. We've already booked a hotel there. I haven't booked the flight yet. I guess I need to do that, and we need to get the car and all. But Dayton is going to be great this year. A number of people were asking about Orlando. I'm not going to be able to make that one. And I think there's a lot of ham fests coming up this weekend. I've heard different people going to them. I didn't write them down, so I'm not sure where they
are. Our ICOM friend Ray Novak, he's down in Puerto Rico this weekend.
Is he? I didn't realize that.
Flew down today. Yeah, flew down there today. San Juan, I believe. So, yeah, he's getting around. Yeah. He travels around a lot.
I think he sees more ham fests than anyone I know. I mean, just almost every weekend, it seems like. Dale, when's the next one coming up out there?
We don't have any here for quite a while. Most of our ham fests are toward the summer and into the fall. So we're going to have to wait a little while here. But we have around 5 in this area down in Oklahoma, over in Missouri, up around Kansas City. Several really nice ham fests. Then the ARRL convention is in Salina. That's all in August. So the vendors around here stay pretty busy in the late summer and early fall. But right now, this time of year, just nothing going on really ham fest wise.
Isn't that Green Country Ham Fest in Oklahoma? Isn't that down around Tulsa? Have you made that one, the Green Country Ham Fest?
No, I sure haven't. The main ones around here are the ones down at around the Salt Lake, down around Enid. One up in Salina, and then down in Oklahoma City, the big one that Bob went to last year. That's a really good ham fest in this area also.
I made the Oklahoma City Ham Fest. It's been back in the mid-90s. That was the last time I was there because I'm from Oklahoma City. So I went back to visit my mom and went to the ham fest. But you should get with Joe Eisenberg, KZRONEB. He lives up there in Lincoln, Nebraska. He goes to all those ham fests. So, you should get with Joe and do some ham fest traveling.
Yeah.
Man with the hat, right?
Yes, he is. The cat in the hat at Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but only Dayton. That's the only time he'll put that hat on. I'm going to have to check out. Yeah, Orlando, I've been hearing really good things about that one. I'm going to have to make that one year. And I've got some friends down in the Miami-Dade area that I need to get down there and check out theirs. I hear that one's coming back as well.
Yeah, but I did Miami many years ago, and I didn't Miami go away for a while, and now it's back, and I hear it's really, really good. So,
yeah, that's the same thing that I've heard. But, you know, there's Ham Fest all over the country, and you should make your plans. Find out when there's one going on in your area and visit it, and, you know, support those organizations that put these on, because it takes a lot of work and effort to put a Ham Fest together. And we're blessed here in the United States to have so many great Ham Fests. And for those of you who don't know what a Ham Fest is, it's just a gathering where a lot of hams get together. Well, I guess it's a little more than a gathering. It's kind of organized, and there'll be vendors there of new equipment, as well as people bringing their old equipment that they want to sell or swap or trade or whatever. You can pick up some good deals there. Probably most of my ham purchases have been made at Ham Fest. So yep. It's something that you really want to catch up on when there's one in your area. And if you can make the big ones like Dayton or the one out on the West Coast, Pacificon, or Huntsville, Orlando, there's just great ham fest everywhere. And I know Cheryl's got some big ones up there. Were you about to say something, Dale?
Yes, I just wanted to let you know there's a big one on the Florida coast called Hamcation, and our good friend on the 40-meter net, Kevin, K7FPF, I believe is his call, is going to be going to that. That's on the weekend of February 8th. He plans to shoot some photos for Ham Nation, so we may be able to see some of that. George, go ahead.
Yeah, that's Orlando.
That is Orlando, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ham Fest, everyone talks about the big Ham Fest, like Dayton and Orlando and Houston, or, well, Dallas and all those. And the big Ham Fest are fun. There are a lot of, I mean, just the best. But, you know, you got to get out and support your local Ham Fest as well. And if you're a brand new ham or watching the show maybe tonight for the first time, stumbled upon us and wondering what all this stuff is, man, you got to go to Ham Fest. And it can be as little, as small as a few of your friends at a park. Something called a junk in the trunk, where you take all the crap from your ham shack and put in your trunk, and everyone goes and digs in everybody else's trunk and says, well, I'll trade you this for that. Or it can be something as big as the largest ham fest in the world, which is Dayton, Ohio. And then the big one, of course, they have the big one in Tokyo, and also Friedrichshafen, Germany, which Joe Eisenberg, K0NEB, the guy who writes the kit building column for CQ, is going to this year. But get out and support your local Ham Fest, because that is the lifeblood of the hobby, for sure. George?
Yeah, and there's a lot of good forums at a number of these Ham Fests as well, where you can learn more about antennas or working DX or just all kinds of topics. And a lot of them have really great presenters that you'd like to see and could pick up a lot of information from. Well, Dale, I know you got something a little special for us this week from Bill Pasternak. Fill us in on that.
Okay, George. I think the people who like, shall we say, vintage video are going to love tonight's show, because right here on the show open, we have a video that was sent to me by Bill Pasternak of Newsline. And then we've got another vintage video from 67 captured on a kinescope in Chicago during the video segment. So right now, let's talk about Bill's show. And we say the show because the word video hadn't been coined yet back in the mid-90s. The name of the show was Always on the Air. It was to have been a 30-minute show for teens. And it was to tell the story of a typical and rather pretty teenage girl in the Midwest who just happened to be a ham radio operator. Long before the days of smartphone and texting captured the minds of the teenagers like it has today. The show was going to be produced for the Amateur Radio Industry Association. It was shot and produced by David Black, KB4KCH, along with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, and the late Roy Neal, K6DUE. The lead actress was 18-year-old Kathy Gilliland. Her call then was KB0FDU. Her call now is WA0KDC. Unfortunately, that show was never completed. And why? Well, in the words of Bill Pasternak, the failure of anticipated funding to be forthcoming. The three-minute open you're about to see was used later as a promotional tour to try to gather more funds, but those funds never came. As Bill told Ham Nation earlier this week, keep in mind, all of this was done long before the advent of those high-quality prosumer digital HD camcorders we take for granted today and the tabletop editing software we have in our fingertips today. You had to hire people, rent broadcast-quality equipment, pay for travel, lodging, and then all those post-production expenses. So the three-minute video you're about to see represents $9,000 in 1990 dollars. Let's watch that.
Good morning. It's 7:24 a.m. on a sunny Kansas morning. And here's the Ham Band now with Always on the Air.
Good old friend of mine.
KB0FDU. WA0KDC. Where are you, Kathy? You're only an hour late. Over.
Meet Kathy Gilliland of Hiawatha, Kansas. A typical American teenager. She has a part-time job. Likes being with her friends. She likes being with boys. And oh yes, Kathy also likes amateur radio. Her call letters... KB0FDU. And this is Kathy's dad, Charlie Gilliland. His call letters are WA0KDC. Charlie works as a service representative for a major computer company. His job keeps him on the road a lot, but amateur radio, ham radio, lets Charlie keep in touch with his family, including Kathy. The Gillilands are a radio family that's always on the air.
The Ham Band provided the music for the video. The morning radio announcer was Jim Davis. He's a ham, too. He's W2JKD. I'd like to thank Bill for sharing that vintage video with the Ham Nation audience. George, what do you think? Wasn't that super?
That was. I would have liked to have seen the thing completed. Based on that kind of funding, though, wow, $9,000 for like 3 minutes. We've already blown through, what, $30,000 or $40,000 here tonight. But fortunately, this stuff is a lot cheaper to do now. But a great idea there. Just sorry that they couldn't see it through. But, you know, it cost a lot of money to do television production work back then. I worked in television in the early 80s, and boy, everything was a lot bigger and heavier back then. It took several people to do almost anything, where now just one person can go out and pretty much shoot a video by themselves. Dale, you know, does that sound right to you, $9,000? I guess it really does in that time period.
I think so. We did some videos with the Coast Guard, where we had to hire a contractor and fly them around the country. And it ran into a lot of money real quickly back then. That equipment you were talking about, too, it was heavy and it was very expensive. Tens of thousands of dollars just for the camera. Now we buy one for $300 or $400 or $500. So, and it takes a lot better pictures now. So amazing things have happened since the mid-1990s, George.
Hey, you want to hear some backstory on what's happened to some of those people that were in the video? Kathy is now a wife and mother. Her last name is now Anno, and she's still very active in ham radio. She's done a little bit of broadcast work as well. You hear Jim Davis, W2JKD, on Amateur Radio Newsline, as well as David Black, KB4KCH, who lives in Birmingham, Alabama. He has done some television meteorology. And has gotten out of the broadcast industry and is now a real estate broker with his wife. And, again, still very active in ham radio, living in Birmingham, Alabama. And, of course, Bill Pasternak is still with Amateur Radio Newsline.
Yeah, that's great to hear. All those people were dedicated to the hobby and have stayed with it, like so many. But, you know, we have a lot of people who kind of fall out of the hobby after a number of years. But some of you are finding your way back thanks to Ham Nation and programs like this. You're kind of getting enthused again about it. And that's why we're here. You know, we want to bring new hams, but we're just as interested in bringing people back who've been out of the hobby for a while. So based on that, we're seeing a lot of success with it. And talking again about the price of the gear there, Dale, I remember a handheld camera that we used for television production down in South Florida. I was an engineer, so, you know, I repaired equipment and stuff. We had an Ikigami camera that was used for commercial production, just handheld. Now, I call it handheld, actually, the thing probably weighed, you know, 20 to 30 pounds. It was quite heavy. $70,000, but, you know, now I've got a $1,000 camera sitting over here that looks much better than that one ever did. But that's the way technology has changed. And, you know, same is true in amateur radio. You can get rigs today that do so much that we never could have imagined, you know, back in the 70s or 80s or earlier. And for a fraction of the price and a fraction of the size as well. And speaking of that, Don, have you got a message here from one of our sponsors tonight who might have said equipment?
I believe, as a matter of fact, I do, you know, and we're going to talk about DX Engineering. See, I'm wearing their shirt tonight. Just a little personal observation about DX Engineering. This shirt, you know, they could have just done a screen print or something, but no, this thing is embroidered. This is a quality shirt, and that's the whole point that I want to make about DX Engineering. No matter what you get from DX Engineering, whether it's stuff that they make themselves, and they make a lot of stuff themselves, or stuff from other manufacturers, it's all going to be quality, and it's going to be money well spent. And after all, what's the point of spending all the money on fancy radios and antennas if you can't make it work? If maybe your coax isn't quite up to snuff, DX Engineering realized there's a huge need for quality American-made coaxial antenna cable. If you're looking to maximize the performance, look at your coax cable. That may very well be the weak link to your shack. Of course, you know, the best radio in the world isn't worth a flip without a good antenna. And of course, the connection between that antenna and that radio is the coax. They carry several types of coax. It's easy to select the right one for your shack and your budget. It's all fully high pot tested and well suited for ham radio applications. Now, the DX Engineering 400 Max low loss cable has a gas injected foam dielectric insulator. It's wrapped in a bonded tape foil, then a tinned copper shield, and finally a durable jacket for outside use. You can even use it in direct burial applications, and it's UV resistant for long outside runs. The sun's not going to eat it up. The DX Engineering 8U cable gives excellent efficiency. It's great for indoor use or in sheltered areas away from sunlight, but be careful. This cable is no longer specced by the military, so cable quality can vary. Make sure you are getting the very best cable by getting it from DX Engineering. If you need RG8X or Mini-8, check out their 8X cable, the DX Engineering 8X. It's extremely flexible, makes it great for short in-shack jumper cable. The small size also means you're not going to have to drill large holes in your walls if you're passing cable between rooms or to the outside, and it's well-suited for HF applications. That's what I use. I like the Mini-8. And if you're running coax line outside to a remote tower, look to the 213U. The jacket is non-contaminating and UV-resistant. You can even use it in direct burial applications, and the cable stands up very well to anything Mother Nature can throw at it. And all of the DX Engineering coax is available in pre-assembled lengths, complete with the connectors. So if you're not real good at soldering PLs or end connectors on, you can have them do it for you. Also, you can get bulk spools and make your own custom lengths. And DX Engineering carries top quality Amphenol connectors to make your own cables and make them the best they can be. If you need a crimper, the Ultra Grip crimp tool from DX Engineering is one of the best on the market. It's perfect for making secure and reliable crimp connections with coax connectors and DC wires with the Anderson power poles, available in a kit with all the dies you'll need. And you can also get the tool and dies separately, kind of roll your own for your own specific application. They also carry soldering irons from American Beauty. Now, if you want to grab any of the gear, here's what you do. You get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will put it on a truck heading your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, the absolute fastest shipping in the industry. DX Engineering helping you shrink the globe. Get the catalog, shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. I've got my DX Engineering catalog right here. And look at this thing. It's gorgeous. It's full color. It's absolute. I mean, it's just, it's awesome. It really is. This is reading material. It's way more than just a catalog. A lot of good information in here. So go to dxengineering.com/hamnation. And DX Engineering, we thank you very much for your support of Ham Nation.
Yeah, and
thank you very much.
Coax is very important, Don. It's just coincidence. That's what I'm going to be talking about a little later in the show tonight. So good timing on that. Mm-hmm. But right now, let's turn things over to Dale. I think you've got some more vintage footage for us and some other stuff tonight, don't you, Dale?
Sure do, George. Thank you very much. Welcome, everyone, to the Ham Nation video segment here this evening. Tonight, we have a timely vintage video from 1967, if that can be timely. But it is timely because it's all about the great blizzard of 67. We also have an overview of the free DV, HF Digital Voice Program. And we've got a look back at 2013 activities from the Sussex County Amateur Radio Club in New Jersey. First, with the blizzard conditions battering the East Coast, Cheryl came through with a fantastic video idea this morning. She got it from one of her chat room favorites, Dave. He's in T9E. This one's a kinescope. Do you remember those, George? It's from WFLD TV, and they made history in 1967 when 150 hams helped cover the largest blizzard in Chicago history. The ham station was set up right in the TV studio. Brian, let's watch that.
On Channel 32, we presented a very unique feature. We did something that has never been done before in broadcasting. We brought to you ham radio reports that have never been broadcast live on a television station before. This ham radio station, call letters WA9RTP. This radio station went on the air at 10:30 or 12:30 this morning, rather, and has been bringing reports from ham operators throughout the area all day. We had 150 separate ham reports tonight. 500 ham operators were standing by. Right now, we go to Jim Roper again and Dick Cox for a roundup report.
Thank you, Pat. We have standing by now 11 stations, all the way from way up north to way down south in Gary, Indiana. And we'll run down very quickly and get the reports from all of these areas. Over to you, Mike, in Skokie. Can you give us the situation there? WA9LIO, WA9RTP, bye.
Roger, WA9RTP from WA9LIO. Roger, in Skokie, all available snow equipment is out. All side streets are blocked, and many cars are stalled in the side streets. The open streets in Skokie are Simpson, Dempster, Cicero, Niles Center Road, north of downtown Skokie, Crawford, south of Dempster, and the closed streets are right now McCormick Street, Grosse Pointe Road, all the road, and all side streets, and 50% of all main arteries are open. That's you, WA9RPT from WA9LIO, bye.
Fine, thank you, Mike, for that report. Now to Mitch, just south of Evanston at WA9NXH from WA9RTP. Take it.
Roger, Jim. WA9RTP from WA9NXH. Well, Morse Avenue and Howard Street are a bit messy, but they're open. 2E Avenue is open. That's probably your best bet for east-west traffic. Sheridan Road is open. That's your best bet for north to south traffic. Eflin Avenue is open to about Howard Street and Jarvis. Jarvis is closed. Up north here have about a 5 to 10 minute wait before they can get going again. No buses are running anywhere. All side streets are closed, and cars are stranded on all the side streets and under the viaduct, and they're just standing there. That's about it over here, except that we have drifts about 5 feet high up north. So back to you, Jim. WA9RTP from WA9NXH.
Thank you, Mitch. Now let's check the Wakanda area. W9JTD, what's the situation there? WA9RTP, bye.
Okay, Jim. WA9RTP, K9JTD. Just got through talking to Lake County Sheriff's Office. The roads are rough in Lake County. Route 176 to Route 41 from Highway 12, very rough. 14 degrees, by the way, here at Wakanda. Highway 120 is still very rough from Volo at Route...
Fine. line. Thank you very much for that report, Bob. And that pretty well covers it, Pat, from the north, swinging all the way around the western suburbs and down to Gary, Indiana. That's the situation as reported by very helpful amateur radio operators.
Jim Roper, Dick Cox, thank you very much. Slightly amazing. First, it was the two field newspapers, the Chicago Daily News and Chicago Sun-Times, combining their efforts with Channel 32 to bring you the most comprehensive news. And now, new radio station, amateur radio, WA9RTP, Field Amateur Radio Club, ham station. And they'll be used in the future. You can be sure of that.
Amazing. Okay, thanks, Cheryl and Dave, for the great blast from the past. Does bring back fond memories here. The first time I directed a live TV show, it was in a television production class in college, and guess what? It was recorded for grading on a kinescope. So that that's something else. While we were at the ARRL Midwest Convention in Lebanon, we had the opportunity to record three interviews featuring different types of digital voice systems. Tonight, we feature the first with a great overview of FreeDV. Our host is Mel Whitten. He's K0PFX of Bridgeton, Missouri.
FreeDV is a relatively new program. It was it came out in December of last year. And it's a sound card-based program. It includes a modem and the Kodak 2, a low-bit Kodak, which is really making it available on HF because it can then operate in a very narrow bandwidth. We operate at 1.2 kilohertz on HF. It has good natural-sounding voice. It's easy to set up. All right, here's the FreeDV. This is an earlier beta version. And at the lower screen, you'll see what looks familiar is a QPSK, which is what PSK31 uses, for example. And this is running automatically. So I'm showing also the timing difference between the transmit and receive station. At the top, you can see the spectrum. And there's 16 carriers in there and a center one, which is provides a sync signal. Back over to the left there is the waterfall. Well, the first place I guess I would look would be 14236. We do have a QSO finder. You can log on to qso.k7ve.org, and you enter your call sign, and you can see who's on the air and what frequency they're on. Plus, it has a place for texting, so you can talk to the guys that are on there, set up the QSO, and try it out.
Okay, CQ FreeDV, CQ FreeDV, CQ FreeDV from N4DV. This is November 4, Delta Victor, calling CQ FreeDV, CQ FreeDV. Is anyone around that would like to talk on FreeDV? This is N4DV at the Lebanon, Missouri ARRL convention.
It's written for Windows, Linux, three distributions of Linux, and it'll also work on Mac. Okay, to get started with FreeDV, obviously you need the program. You can go to this website, FreeDV, HF Digital Voice for Radio Amateurs. The actual sound of digital sounds like this over the air. You can see the peaks in it here. Well, this is what it would sound like if you tuned across it on the band. Okay. Well, for the setup, it's relatively easy. Again, if you're now running PSK31, then you have the data taken care of from the radio to the input of the computer and then out of the computer back into the radio. So there's where you get your data, which is fed into the modem. The modem is also software, and then that runs into the coder-decoder. And the output of that coder-decoder goes back through a sound card to convert it back to analog so you can listen to it on your speaker.
Well, thank you very much, Mel. Great job explaining a free open source solution for those who want to pursue digital voice on HF in only 1.2K of bandwidth, by the way. Well, we'll wrap up tonight's videos with an overview of the 2013 activities of the Sussex County Amateur Radio Club in New Jersey. The report was produced by Frank Brunke, W2FDB. Let's watch that one now.
W2LV was adopted in March 1999 as the club call for the Sussex County Amateur Radio Club, and it is dedicated to the memory of its former member and radio pioneer, the late Robert M. Morris. Sweepstakes turned out to be a very successful weekend. We operated for 24 straight hours with no breaks. We achieved a clean sweep and had 995 QSOs and 198,000 points. The weather was good and the club participation was terrific. Calling CQ contests from the top of the mountain was great for the June VHF contest. Many of the devices used are created by our very own president, N2HMM. These allowed our signal to be heard and resulted in fantastic results. Field Day is always a great event for W2LV. This year we had a film crew recording us for an upcoming documentary on hobbies. Operating from a local field, we had several towers set up. This is a great learning experience for new techs and seasoned Elmers to pick up a thing or two. If you're in the Northeast, there is only one Hamfest to attend. We have floor-to-floor vendors and a field filled with tailgaters. 2013 was our best Hamfest to date. In cooperation with the Sussex County Sheriff's Office, our club held classes for technician and generals looking to upgrade. Both classes ended on a high note with many new technicians and also many new upgrades. The rookie roundup was a great time. We set up a freestanding tower and we learned how to make dipole antennas. While only newly licensed TAMs could operate during this event, we also had several Elmers on hand to answer questions and also provide demonstrations. You can learn more about the Sussex County Amateur Radio Club to whiskey.sierra-charlie-alpha-romeo-charlie-november-juliet.oscar-romeo-golf.
Well, thanks, Frank, for that wrap-up of club activity in 2013 there in New Jersey. If you'd like us to present a wrap-up of your club's events in 2013, send it on in to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. And don't forget to provide a narration track so that our audio podcast listeners won't be left out in the dark. By the way, Frank, W2FDB, was the narrator on that presentation also. Well, let's pop up our club website of the week, Brian. The website this week is www.4x4ham.com. I bet Don goes to that site. Founded in 2008 by a group of hams and 4x4 enthusiasts, the 4x4 Ham Club now has more than 500 members around the United States and the world. The site was nominated by Tom Ford. He's 87 TI. The club's dedicated to promoting the use of amateur radio in all outdoor activities. They joined forces with other groups to promote responsible land use and many public service events. They also feature ham radio-only trail runs, survival training, as well as first aid and technical clinics. Check it out for yourself, www.4x4ham.com. And we thank you for sending that in, Tom. If you'd like to get a favorite ham site on Ham Nation here, just send the link to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv. Well, it's time now to announce the winner of the Ham's Choice Award for videos aired during the month of December. Our winner is Freeze Your Acorns Off. That's the special event from the Portage County Amateur Radio Club. It was produced by Parkey, KB8UUZ. The club captured 34% of the voting this month. Our runner-up for December was Amateur Radio Condensed Version. That came from David Anderson, K1AN. David came in with about 22% of the vote. Well, Parkey will receive this Helping Hands with Magnifier tool, courtesy of Mark, KB0MOF, of the Ham Radio Center here in Derby, Kansas. That's the candy store for the Wichita area. And thanks, Mark. We appreciate you sponsoring the Ham's Choice Awards. We would love to show your photos and your videos here on Ham Nation and to give you a chance to be selected by your fellow hams as the Ham's Choice Award winner during the month. If you've got a video, just send that link again or your photo to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. We only have received one photo so far for our next Show Me Your Shack episode, so get those shack photos into us also. We hope to have another group on the air sometime around the second week in February. And that's it. That's a wrap for the Ham Nation video segment. Good night to all, and Don's up next with Newsline. Don, what's going on this week?
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1901, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2014. The just-released December 2013 issue of the IARU Region 1 Monitoring System electronic newsletter reports a new Russian over-the-horizon radar signal has been heard loud and clear in the 20-meter band. Hal Rogers, K8CMD.
Wolfgang Hadl, DK2OM, is the International Amateur Radio Union's Region 1 Monitoring Service Coordinator. He says that the latest over-the-horizon radar signal was about 10 kilohertz wide when it was heard and recorded on 14.305, and that it kind of sounded a lot like the infamous Russian woodpecker radar system of days gone by. But that's not the only place the new woodpecker-like interference has been heard. Other reports say the latest incarnation of the Russian woodpecker has also shown up on 15 and 10 meters, making a pest of itself on those bands as well. And if that were not enough, DK2OM says that another growing problem out of Russia is the unchecked proliferation of taxicabs being heard on 10-meter FM. While I did not post any sound file on this one, he did put up a spectrum display photo taken on December 15th. It shows 10-meter contest activity between 28.0 and 28.55 megahertz, with many Russian taxicabs operating narrowband FM just above. Not a very good situation for hams living in Europe and other nearby nations.
You'll find a link to the IARU report in this week's printed edition of the Amateur Radio Newsline Report. Back in October of 2011, Newsline reported the story of David Coet, N6DAC, who was one of eight persons killed in a Los Angeles, California suburb by a mass shooter. Now his widow is in danger of losing her home. Newsline's Joe Mel, K0OV.
After he was murdered as he sat in his Range Rover outside a beauty salon in Seal Beach, the nightmare for his wife and family has never stopped. According to ABC TV News in Los Angeles, Coet was between jobs at the time. His family says he had temporary life insurance, but the company says he never signed the forms and is refusing to pay. Without that income, his wife has fallen behind on the mortgage and it is nearing foreclosure. The family says that without more income or someone to buy the mortgage and lease back the condo, she will lose her home. Donations are being accepted online at GoFundMe.com. Type the URL as one word, GoFundMe.com, then search that site for Seal Beach Shooting. Meanwhile, accused killer Scott Decry remains in county jail, segregated from other inmates for his own safety. According to the Orange County Register, deputies have had to pepper spray him at least once when he became disruptive. Trial for the 44-year-old was scheduled to start last November, but it has been delayed until March 24th of this year.
At the time of his murder, news reports said that David Coet was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time and had no way to defend himself. The Orange County District Attorney's Office, which is prosecuting the case, claims that Decry walked out of a beauty salon where he is said to have methodically killed its staff and patrons, including his ex-wife, and then shot N6DAC, who was the driver of the vehicle that was simply parked next to him. After some 30 years in Bellevue, Washington, ICOM America has relocated to new and substantially larger headquarters, not too far away. The new address is 12421 Willows Road Northeast, Kirkland, Washington, 98304. All communication should be sent only to the new address. The main phone number is still 1-800-USA-ICOM, and that translates to 1-800-872-4266. And, of course, the website is still ICOMAmerica.com. Turning to space news, Dmitry Pashkov, UB4UAD, reports transmissions have begun in the 70-centimeter band from a pair of Russian IAT microsatellites.
IAT-2 was launched last April 19th. It operates on 435.215 megahertz. Its companion, IASAT-1, transmits on 435.265 megahertz. It rode to orbit December 28th. Until now, no signals have been reported from these microsats in the amateur bands, but since January 3rd, both of the tiny birds have been transmitting a New Year's greeting on the 435 megahertz frequencies. Also, four new CubeSats are now on board the International Space Station after being carried to the orbiting outpost on January 9th. The four ham radio birds are named Lituanicasat-1, Litsat-1, Ardusat-2, and UAPSat-1. Lituanicasat-1 carries a 145 to 435 megahertz FM transponder. Litsat-1 is thought to be a 435 to 145 megahertz linear transponder for SSB and CW. It's expected the CubeSats will be deployed from the International Space Station in the coming months. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And that's the news for the week from Amateur Radio Newsline, and we thank them for making that available to us. I believe we have a word from our next sponsor, don't we? And that would be ICOM.
Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio, and it's great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rabbit charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70AHD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection.
Some great rigs there, and you want to go check them out right away. And get your best deal, because ICOM's got some instant savings for the new year's going on at this time. And we want you to enter our contest. It's after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win. You could win something out of the icomswagstore.com. Great prizes there from ICOM, and you can purchase some of those things if you'd like to at the store. But also, as a special, we've got a monthly giveaway of a radio, and for January, it's going to be the IC2300H. It's a rugged 2-meter transceiver with 65 watts of stable output, 4.5 watts of loud audio, built-in weather alert function, and it meets the mil standard 810G specification. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after the show this evening and after each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. And, you know, a little bit earlier, Don was talking about coax, and it just so happens that's what I'm talking about on Smoke and Solder this week. So let's take a look.
This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about transmission lines, primarily coax lines, but first let's talk about open wire transmission line like ladder line. That's balance lines, and there are many types of balance lines. 300-ohm twin lead, commonly used for TV antennas, 450-ohm ladder line, which many hams prefer, telephone wire, and Cat 5 cables are all balance lines. The spacing of the leads determines the impedance of these lines. A balance line is a transmission line consisting of two conductors of the same type, each of which have equal impedances along their lengths and equal impedances to ground and to other circuits. The chief advantage of balanced lines is good rejection of external noise. Balanced and unbalanced circuits can be connected together using a transformer called a balun. Circuits driving balanced lines must be balanced themselves to maintain the benefits of balance. This can be done by differential signaling, transformer coupling, or by merely balancing the impedances in each conductor. Waves propagating down the lines extend into the space surrounding the wires. These lines have low loss, but also have some undesirable characteristics. They cannot be bent, twisted, or otherwise shaped without changing their characteristic impedance, causing reflections of the signal back toward the source. They also can't be buried or run along or attached to anything conductive, as the extended fields will induce currents into nearby conductors, causing unwanted radiation and detuning of the line. Coaxial lines solve this problem by confining virtually all of the electromagnetic wave to the inside area of the cable. Coax lines can therefore be bent and moderately twisted without negative effects, and they can be strapped to conductive surfaces like a tower leg without inducing unwanted currents in them. Coaxial cable is unbalanced. An inner conductor is surrounded by a tubular insulating layer, which is surrounded by a tubular conducting shield. Most coaxial cables also have an insulating outer jacket. Coax cable was invented by English engineer and mathematician Oliver Heaviside in the late 1800s. Coaxial cables differ from other shielded cables used for lower frequency signals like audio signals in that the dimensions of the cable are controlled to give a precise, constant conductor spacing, which is necessary for it to function efficiently as a radio frequency transmission line. The best coaxial cable impedances in high power, high voltage, and low attenuation applications were experimentally determined at Bell Laboratories in 1929 to be 30, 60, and 77 ohms, respectively. For a coaxial cable with an air dielectric and a shield of a given inner diameter, the attenuation is minimized by choosing the diameter of the inner conductor to give a characteristic impedance of 76.7 ohms. When more common dielectrics are considered, the best low-loss impedances drop down to a value between 52 and 64 ohms, while maximum power handling is achieved at 30 ohms. The approximate impedance required to match a center-fed dipole antenna in free space is 73 ohms, so 75 ohms coax was commonly used for connecting shortwave antennas to receivers. These typically involve such low levels of RF power that power handling and high-voltage breakdown characteristics are not important when compared to attenuation. The aromatic mean between 30 ohms and 77 ohms is 53.5 ohms. The geometric mean is 48 ohms. So the selection of 50 ohms is a compromise between power handling capability and attenuation and is generally cited as the reason for the number. 50 ohms also works out well because it corresponds very closely to the drive impedance of a half-wave dipole in real environments and provides an acceptable match to the drive impedances of a quarter-wave monopole as well. Now, some hams only use ladder line for their HF antennas, and that's okay just depending on your antenna and your situation. However, I've never really seen anyone use this for VHF or UHF. Let's take a look at some coaxes here. This is a piece of RG6. It's a 75-ohm cable. It's essentially the same thing as RG59. However, this is just a little bit bigger and a little bit lower loss. This particular RG59 here has a foil shield on it, and there are a few strands of wire for the shield there as well. And you'll see this used with cable TV, television antennas, and such. It's 75 ohms, and you could use it with an antenna. However, you would want your antenna feedport impedance to be 75 ohms. And at the rig end, you're going to need something to match that 50-ohm rig to 75 ohms as well. Typically, you could use a balun or something of that nature for that. But 75-ohm cable is not normally used in amateur radio.
But I do have friends who are using it where they had a real long run of cable, and this stuff is pretty cheap here. The guy I'm thinking about matched it well at the antenna and at the rig, and it worked great for him. Now, before we move on, here's another piece of 75-ohm cable. This right here is also RG6. It's got a messenger wire attached to it. That's so you can hang it and not put stress on the coax itself. This one has a little better wire shielding on it than that other one we looked at it, so all of these coaxes are not created equal. Now, moving on to 50-ohm cable, which we might commonly use, this is a piece of RG58. Now, this cable is okay. The loss on it is a little bit higher than it is on some other cables. This one has a good braided shield, though, this particular cable. And you can see the diameter of it there. It's not going to carry a lot of power. Now, you can look on charts to determine how much loss you have at different frequencies on coax, and we'll talk about that in a moment. This cable here is low loss Super 8 from the Wireman. Now, RG8 cable looks the same as this. However, you might notice that the shielding here is a little heavier than you're going to find on typical RG8 cable, and there's also a foil shield in there as well. Now, this cable has lower loss than standard RG8 cable. Another cable I like to use in the large coax variety is RG213. That's good cable as well, and I would really compare this one more to RG213 than I would to RG8. But if you're running a linear amplifier or if you're running a long run of cable, then you're going to want some large coax like this. This is also good for VHF communications. I would not use the RG58 for VHF, or especially not for UHF. Unless you've got a really short run, you could get by with it on VHF, but I would never use it on UHF. This stuff here, it would work okay. It'd work good for VHF, not as good for UHF. There are other cables like LMR 400 or Belden 9913 that are good as well and have a little lower loss. One other cable that I really like, and I use a fair amount of, this is RG8X. It's also referred to as Mini-8. You can see it's a little bit bigger than RG58. That means it's going to have a little lower loss, and it's going to carry more power than the 58 will. Generally, the shield is a little heavier here. It's a bigger diameter cable, and also you can see this one has stranded conductors in it. It's also available with just a single conductor like the RG58 is. The advantages of the stranded conductors here is it's a little more flexible and won't break as easy. So I really like this stuff for mobile work. Since you've got short leads there, it works great, and it'll handle that 100-watt HF rig okay, but the loss is not so high on VHF and UHF either on shorter pieces. Some people actually use this for their HF antennas, and that works good, and you can get several hundred watts into this without a problem. It's called Mini-8, and there's a pretty good difference between this RG58 and this 8X or Mini-8 cable here. If you're not running a linear amplifier on HF, this is probably the way I would go. Unless it's got to be extremely long, I think you would find this very suitable. Of course, RG8 or RG213, or in this case, the Super 8 cable, is probably a little better for your HF operations, particularly if you're running power, and you can run a little longer length on it as well without much loss. But really, the Mini-8 here, the RG8X, would be sufficient if you're not running an amplifier. For long runs on VHF and UHF, you might want something a little better than coax. In that case, you might want to go with Heliax. And there's two different types. There's one that's got air dielectric in it, and another that has a solid dielectric. Hams would typically use the foam dielectric or solid dielectric because you don't have to pressurize it. Air dielectric lines are typically compressed with dry air or nitrogen to keep moisture out. Heliax is a great choice for VHF and UHF, and it's referred to as hardline by a lot of hams. However, coming from the broadcast community, we call hardline this stuff right here, which is rigid transmission line.
Heliax and rigid transmission line would be way overkill for HF, so I don't recommend that. We're out of time this week, but I want to show you how to use charts to determine the loss on your coax cable, so we'll look at that next week.
So there you go, a little bit of discussion about transmission lines, and we'll go into that in a little more detail next month, or not next month, next week, and we'll help you decide what type of cable you want to use. Well, last week I asked a question, what is the lowest frequency a technician may transmit on? And we had a winner, that's Steve Shea, it's KC9JPX, and he said the lowest frequency a technician class can transmit on is 80 meters 3525 with 200 watts CW. So congratulations, Steve. You're going to win this MFJ G5RV kit. It's the only one I know of in the world in kit form from MFJ because we cut the ends off of it to do a demonstration at the Midwest Amateur Radio Convention back toward the end of last year. And I'm going to be sending that out to Steve this week. But for next week, I've got a good prize here. It's the Howell Radio Amateur or Ham Radio Handbook, second edition from Bob, K9EID. Great book here. Lots of good information in there. If you'd like to win that, then answer this. Many coax cables have the prefix RG. What does the RG stand for? If you think you know the answer to that, send me your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win. And right now, let's join in with Cheryl in the chat room and see what's going on. Cheryl?
Hey there, George. How are you? Hey, by the way, thank you very much for that nice segment that you put on for all those cables. That's just fascinating. Can't wait to see part two. Hey, everybody. Welcome, and nice to see you in the chat room so vibrantly. It's so great to see everybody in there. And by the way, I just wanted to say it's outlandishly cold up here, so I'm going to crank up the linear as usual and throw on a couple logs on that amp just to make the room a little warmer here. And I do have to go into this this one person that was on the 75 meters last night, Jim, KF2YR. A big hello goes out to him in New York in Franklin Square. I guess he was shoveling some snow. It was -8 degrees there, and it kept on coming down. So I wanted to give him a big warm hello and glad to see he's back on 75 meters anyway. So let's take it a little bit further here. Because I did have one thing that I wanted to share. It might be a little bit off topic, but I'll make it quick. But I thought everybody would get a kick out of this, because I sure did. And it was given to me from somebody on the 75-meter band just last night. So it was LMGTFY. And I thought it was really great, because how many times people say, well, where can I find that particular thing? And what that stands for is, let me Google that for you. And I just got a big kick out of it. I guess it's a single-serving site powered by a Google search engine that can simulate a custom search query. But it is the cutest thing in the world is, let me Google that for you. Check it out, lmgtfy.com. And we'll move on to some of the questions here. And what I'm going to do is go into the question for Don, if you are on the line with us, which I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're there, right? Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Still?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, from VA2XMX, Peter. He says, for Don, since you're involved in broadcast radio, how does one go about getting involved in broadcast radio? How would one get behind the mic of a radio station? Can you steer us in the right direction, Don?
Yeah, I saw that come across. I was watching the chat room and saw that come across live, and... Well, first off, one must be unemployable in any other industry, it seems like. But no, I'm kidding. you know, I've been doing it for 36 years. It's a lot harder now than it was back then, because, you know, back then you had these little small market radio stations that kind of acted as a farm team for the big stations. And those have kind of gone by the wayside, because you've got just a few corporations that are owning hundreds and hundreds of radio stations. So it's difficult to do. But if you've got a local radio station, and again, that's locally owned and has local programming, get with them and you know, they decided that they had to hire me because they couldn't get me to leave. So, but it's a lot harder now than it used to be, because it seems like there's no farm team, because there's no locally owned radio stations anymore. But a college radio station is a good way to do it. But again, just make friends with somebody at your local radio station. Hopefully a small market radio station is a great way to start, and see if you can get your feet wet that way. But yeah, so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thanks, Don, for that great answer. All right. Let's move on to, I have a question from KD2 EPQ Pierre. He says he had a question about RF grounding his equipment. And George, just a quick one. Can he ground his radio with a number 12 wire hooked up to a copper pipe in a basement, or does he absolutely need a ground rod outside and ground straps? It's just a basic question. Over to you, George.
Well, I always hate to answer grounding questions because there's so many different opinions on that. Sure, mm-hmm. you can use a number 12 wire and to a copper pipe, but that's probably not going to be as good as actually putting a ground rod out there and using something a little heavier, preferably braid or copper strap, but you can use wire as well. The problem when you're connecting to a cold water pipe or something like that is it doesn't go straight into the ground. It runs all over the place, and you might be creating as many problems as you're solving by doing that.
Well, thank you very much for that. Perfect. And I have a question from Alan, NY2G, and I think I'm going to field this one myself. He says his wife helps him out in the shack, and now she wants to get her license, so that sounds interesting. He wanted to know if there was any suggestions where we can get some of her online training sources. So one is, it's powered by ICOM. We highly suggest this website. Very good for training. Even has flashcards. And that website is hamstudy, www.hamstudy.org. And you'll have to create a user password and go in there. I use it. It has all the different levels of testing, and information is vast there. So check out that ICOM site. Also, W5YI.org is another online site. And, of course, we always suggest that you go on to QRZ.com and type in Gordon West's call sign, WB6NOA. And his information is there. He's got a lot of good stuff. I was trained off of Gordon West's books. He's not on the program tonight, but he'll be rejoining us next week. So we want to say hi to Gordo too. But, you know, I really recommend all three. I mean, it's just, I really wish her a lot of success too, Alan. Tell her it's really worthwhile, and you can really put that down on your resume too. It really helps, let me tell you. So, all right. And we also have one from KF5 FEI Bill. He was talking about SignalLink with one of the other chat roomers. He recommended it since it has knobs. I don't know if it's so much a question as a comment. I thought was really good, and it can be adjusted on the fly without having to fiddle with the PC audio levels. And, you know, we here at our shack, we have the SignalLink. It's a USB piece of hardware, and you can use HRD, meaning Ham Radio Deluxe. And we use it for all the digital modes as well as CW. And then, for the most part, it's just an interesting piece of equipment to have that you could use. So we recommend it. And also, there's a question here from Jay, KE6SLS. I'm going to bring this one to you too, again, George. He says, why does my HF rig get quiet when I change bands before I retune my matchbox? And that's a tuner. For instance, going from 20 meters to 40 meters, I said it is due to extreme impedance mismatch. Is he correct that he wanted to know that? And go ahead, George, with your answer.
He is correct. Yeah, you're not tuned to the frequency that you're on. You've got to retune to get the best match there. And, you know, that's how a lot of people kind of rough in their tuners, is tune it to your hearing noise. So, yeah, he's correct.
Can you confirm if it's best to always use the capacitance side of your tuner to get the best receive, and then go after your inductor and transmit for your best SWR, George?
I can neither confirm nor deny. I've heard a lot of people say the inductor first, but you know, if you're not transmitting, if you're just listening for noise, you can go to either one of them.
Okay. Thank you for your answer. And Dale, I don't have any questions for you. I wish I did, but I want to thank you for all your wonderful video work that you put together, and we really enjoy it so very much. Great job. So with that, I just want to say, please, everyone, tune into the after show Ham Nation QSO on 75 meters of frequency tonight. We'll be 3.847 megahertz, and I'll be there at the mic, and we can take some of your check-ins or a short QSO. That would be really nice. So everyone, please join us next Wednesday night. I'm Cheryl Lass at K9BIK. Till then, I'll see you on the airwaves, everyone. 73. All right.
73, Cheryl. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you again next week. We're going to come back in just a moment and briefly tell you what we are planning for next week's show. But right now, I think Don has some ting to tell us about.
Yes, I do. I do have some ting to tell you about, and that is ting. Ting is what's known as a reseller, an MVNO. They resell the nationwide Sprint network. And what makes Ting different is there are no contracts or early termination fees. They are truly and completely contract-free. Also, if you're paying an early termination fee to come to Ting, they will help you with that. They'll give you a credit for 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. You just purchase your device through Ting, port your number, submit your final bill with the ETF detail from the previous carrier. Ting.com/ETF will give you all the details on that. And you can pick your service size. They range all the way from extra small through double extra large. And that's the levels for voice minutes, text messages, and megabytes of data. And it's all billed separately. The other guys, they charge you if you go over your allocated minutes or text or data. Ting won't do that. If you have a heavier month with Ting, you just pay for what you use. It's that simple. Also, it's all rolled in together. Your voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding. Other features, they're all part of the service. You don't pay extra for those. That's right. Ting charges you for what you use, plus whatever taxes they are legally required to collect. You won't find any weird line items on your bill. No hidden charges, recovery fees, or any of that other stuff. And you can have as many devices as you want on one plan, sharing the pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. Each device on the plan just costs a flat $6 more a month. You take total control of the account, your usage, your bills, with a powerful online control panel. And if you do decide you need to talk to someone, you pick up the phone, you call 1-855-TING-FTW. Think about that as Ting for the win. Anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and a real live, actual breathing human being will smile, pick up the phone and say, "Hi, thanks for calling Ting. How can I help you tonight?" Well, that's how it works. And also go to help.ting.com for active customer forums, a simple and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials and video startup guides, and a whole lot more. And if you still have trouble, of course, pick up the phone and call 855-TING-FTW. Here's how it works. You purchase your mobile device from Ting. You'll get that in 2 to 5 business days. Or bring your favorite Sprint phone to Ting. If you've got a 4 or 4S iPhone, bring that. It'll work. Check out the full list of eligible phones by going to the special URL and clicking on the BYOD link at the top of the page. Ting will even help you turn your old device into cash and help you with the move to Ting. And after you activate with Ting, you have the option to select a new phone number or port your existing one. They'll even break your rates out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit Ting today. Hamnation.ting.com. That's what you're looking at there on your screen. Hamnation.ting.com. You will save money and better manage your mobile phone usage with Ting. You can check out the savings calculator and see just exactly how much you or your company can save by moving to Ting. And because you're a Ham Nation viewer, you'll save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. It's very easy. Hamnation.ting.com. Start saving today. And Ting, thanks a lot for being a sponsor and a supporter of Twit and of Ham Nation. George, that's a great service there. It's I always like to bring something special to the show. And
Sorry. You always bring something special, Don. Good to see you again tonight. I would ask you,
too.
What we're going to have on the news next week, but I guess that would kind of be like predicting the weather. So,
as Newsline is released on Friday, I don't know that yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sorry we're going to miss you this weekend. Have fun with the monster trucks, and we'll have fun at the Ham Fest. Dale, any ideas what you'll be doing next week?
Yes, we're leaving Friday morning about 6 for Fort Lauderdale. We're going to be going over to Nassau and St. Thomas and St. Martin's. So we'll be out next week. Dan N9LVS, who does that great job as a webmaster for our hamnationvideos.info website, is going to step in for me. Unfortunately, right now, we do not have any viewer videos. So if you have one, now's the time to get it in here so Dan can show it for you next week. George, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Dale. Well, you have a great vacation there. That sounds like the place to be heading this time of year, especially with the weather you're about to have there. And, yeah, we look forward to seeing Dan in here. You know, Dan does the wiki for Ham Nation. So you can get the show notes there and find out what we've talked about on the different episodes, some links and such in there. Great help. We really appreciate Dan doing that for us. Before we go, I just want to mention the after-show nets. You can catch the 40-meter net at 7.278. We've also got an Echo Link net on Star Do Drop In Star. That's node number 355-800. And the D-Star net is back in full swing on Reflector 14, Module C. Thanks for being with us, everyone. Gordo will be back with us next week. Bob will still be on the road, but maybe he'll be able to check in with us. Just depends on where he is and what kind of connectivity he has. So 7-3, have a great week, and we'll see you next Wednesday night.